Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
As I watch the video coverage on the TV and the internet, I really think that people are still upset that we have an African-American president. We still have some issues in America, and that's clearly obvious.
Yes, it's me, and I'm in love again. Had no love in sin.
Well, I knew the day would come that the racism would be brought up. Yes, the old Saul Alinsky playbook. Many of you don't know who Saul Alinsky is. Why talk about him? Just a street thug, an organizer, communist, left-winger. Learned it from the Bolsheviks. A student of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia came to Chicago, taught him how to do agitprop, taught him how to wear Nazi uniforms and say yes to Republicans. So, you know, all of these people now who are wearing mustaches and the Hitler things, they're all being put out by the same people who put him in, that's all. Now, this is Thursday the 13th. Beware the Ides of August, says Savage. Beware the Ides of August. I told you that a cornered animal is a very dangerous animal indeed. And I predict that the Ides of August will bring some terrible things to America. Now, I'm not Nostradamus, but I will say beware the Ides of August. I can't say whether it will be the 15th or the 16th or the 17th. But mark down that I said today on Thursday the 13th, beware the Ides of August. Obama's Surgeon General Pick advises Burger King. Senator Debbie Stabenow says she feels global warming when she flies in an airplane. These dunces, these idiots, how do they become senators? How do people with lower than fifth grade educations in science become heads of panels on energy? How is this possible? How are people who know nothing about the environment the head of environmental committees inside the Obama White House? This is right out of the ex-Maoist China, where they took laundresses from the laundry room and said, you are now a surgeon. You got to hear this article. Henry Payne of the Detroit News wrote an affectionately critical article of Senator Debbie Stabenow. Now, her real name is not Stabenow. Her name is Debbie Stabenow. But for reasons of easy identification, I've renamed her Senator Debbie Stabenow because she's apparently so smart that when she flies in airplanes, she can actually feel global warming. I have to read the article to you, and I will eventually, okay, once I can download it. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. We're going to talk about the Soviet-style media in America. We're going to talk about Michael Savage being a victim of the Soviet-style media in America today. And I learned that I'm actually in good company. I learned today that Winston Churchill was banned from the BBC for a period of up to 8 years. Did you know that? The man who saved Britain during its darkest moments was banned from the BBC for the years leading up to World War II. He was put into political exile by the liberals of his day, where Churchill was labeled an extremist. At a time when his voice and free speech was needed the most, he was banned from the BBC. And that is why my voice is banned in Britain right now, because I'm standing up to the push for neo-worldwide Marxism, and it begins with suppressing free speech. Today they came for a conservative, tomorrow it will be you. So now we have the con of global warming. And Senator Debbie Stabenow, energy leader, according to Henry Payne, who's the editorial cartoonist for the Detroit News, here's what he wrote. It's very short. He says, Michigan has just experienced its coldest July on record. Global temperatures haven't risen in more than a decade. Great Lakes water levels have resumed their 30-year cyclical rise. Contrary to a decade of media scare stories, that the lakes were drying up due to global warming. And polls show that climate change doesn't even make a list of Michigan voters' top 10 concerns. Yet, in an interview with the Detroit News Monday, Senator Debbie Stabenow, Democrat Michigan, recently appointed to the Senate Energy Committee, made clear that fighting the climate crisis is her top priority. Here's what Debbie Stabenow said. Quote, climate change is very real, she confessed, as she embraced cap-and-trade's massive tax increase on industry, at the same time claiming against all the evidence that it would not lead to an increase in manufacturing costs or energy prices. She said, global warming creates volatility. I feel it when I'm flying. The storms are more volatile. We are paying the price in more hurricanes and tornadoes, close quote. And then the writer adds, and there are sea monsters in Lake Michigan. I can feel them when I'm boating. You know, it's one thing to laugh at these stupid idiots who are our leaders, the senators and the congressmen. These do-nothing, they're lobbyists. They're lobbyists. What do you think they are? Senator this, senator that, congressman this. They're puppets on a string. Use the word lobbyist. You know, they're puppets on a string. They do what the people who put them in power want them to do. So now you've got a moron like this with a fifth grade science education, if that much. I can guarantee you if I got Senator Debbie Stabenow in a room with no teleprompters and I asked her questions such as, can you define what an atom is? Can you tell me what a molecule is? Can you give me the atomic structure of carbon? I mean, that's an easy one. A fifth grade student from India can tell you what the atomic structure of carbon is. Indian kids come over here. They don't speak English. Within a year, they win the spelling bee. You got others here, 5,000 years, they can't win a spelling bee. Eh, what's the difference? I know what's going on. I'm watching you-know-what go to wear in a basket. You know what I'm talking about. It's summertime. Beware the Ides of August. Play me some music. I'll take some calls. 1-800-449-8255. I had the nightmare again last night. What? What is this? Yeah, turn it off. It's not my kind of music. I'm in the mood more for Frankie Avalon, something like Catalina. Who sings Catalina? Because when I grew up in the Bronx, to me the idea of Catalina was like Nirvana, that anybody could have a nice pastel shirt, a good haircut, and spend his days going to Catalina with pretty, you know, like bunnies, you know, whatever. I was schlepping to high school working in a clothing store after school. He was dancing off to Avalon in some Chris Craft. Right? I mean, doesn't this evoke that whole era? Like the good-looking Southern Californian? You should see them on the streets of Berkeley now. Take a look at them at the age 50, what they look like. Busted suitcases, junkies, it's horrible. You know, there's a curse to being handsome when you're young and good-looking and successful. It doesn't work all the time. Sometimes it's good to be, instead of tall, dark, and handsome, short, white, and ugly. Let me tell you, there's an advantage to it. Who says tall, dark, and handsome is the norm anyway? They used to say, oh, she likes it. You know, remember the Americans say, he's tall, dark, and handsome? Well, there's nothing wrong if you are. But what if you were short, white, and ugly? What are you supposed to do, commit suicide? I'm just having fun here. You know, boys just want to have fun. You think I'm going to get excited over Obama? I mean, what he's going to do is what he's going to do. You think they're going to give up because you discovered that he's a Marxist? You think he's going to go away? You think he's going to stop being a Marxist because you found out he's a Marxist? Ha! You think that because you discovered that the 51st Ward of Chicago was now the United States of America, they're going to stop behaving as though Al Capone took over America? We don't have an Elliot Ness. Can you raise the music? What am I, going deaf here? I can't hear it. I'm supposed to get high from the music. I can't hear the damn thing. If I have to swim, I'll do it forever. All right. Yeah, where is he today with Annette Funicello? I never cared for her as a figure in the Mickey Mouse days. She was... I mean, Annette Funicello, like, I don't understand her, how she got where she was. She was never really attractive. Talk about heartthrobs from that day. I'm trying to remember now. I'm just drifting, because I don't care about politics for the moment. Who was a hot, like, movie star, teenage chick in my day? I'm trying to think of where they are. Carol Lindley, I remember. I used to go to dark movie theaters and imagine Carol Lindley was my girlfriend. Where is she today? Probably somewhere, I would imagine, in Palm Springs with a transfusion tree and a walker somewhere. The skin worn out from the sun, like a prune face. I hope not. But generally, that's how it ends up. And earlier rather than later from the dissipation. You know, either that or they found God early on in life and it saved them. But usually not. Usually there were party types, and by 50, or 40, washed up by 30, shot by 40, and a basket case by 50 with the tree and the cigarette in a trailer somewhere in the back of a B-movie. Like a scene where the daughter comes, "How are you, Mom?" And Mom is staring off into the desert with, you know, stone blue eyes. That's the movie. That's the movie. That's the movie. So where were we when I got so confused with my with my free association? Oh, a dream I had last night. Remember I've told you for 10 years now I've been having a nightmare that I'm trapped at Heathrow and can't get out of it? I had it again last night. Again, I was in London. I was trapped at trying to get on a plane at Heathrow to get out of the country. Listen to this. You know, this is like precognitive recognition of what's coming. For 10 years, I've had a nightmare that I was trapped at Heathrow in a large crowd and I couldn't get my plane in time to go home to New York, even though I don't live there. And no matter what I did, I'm trying to get on Pan Am, I'm trying to get on British Air. I can't find my way and the plane's leaving and then I get on and there's no seat. I'm trapped in England. Now, I want you to understand something. I've had this dream for well over 10 years. It's a recurring nightmare. Last night, I had it again. Now, I'm not trapped in England, but I'm trapped from going into England. And speaking of the geniuses who run England, the man who engineered the blowing up of Pan Am 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, is about to be released. The wonderful Arab, you're not supposed to say that. The wonderful worshiper of the religion of peace. Oh, excuse me, I'm not supposed to notice that either. A man with a long Arabic name from the Middle East who blew up Pan Am 103 and killed 200 people, who is in jail in Lockerbie, Scotland, is being released from prison, and apparently he's not banned from the UK. In fact, he's imprisoned in the UK, so go figure. All I did was speak out, and I'm banned from the UK, but a terrorist who blew up an airplane is actually probably going to be invited to the parliament to give a speech. Go, no. Go figure. I'll be back.
Savage.
A white sport coat and a pink carnation. I'm all dressed up for the dance.
I'm just drifting today. What the heck? What do I care? I'm watching America go you know where in a handbasket. There's nothing I can do about it. You don't care. What do I care? The town hall meetings, as you well know, are all Ku Klux Klan members and American Nazis. They're not actual Americans. According to Obama and the people on MSNBC, the only protesters who are actual Americans are those paid for by Obama and the Democrat machine, such as Acorn Thugs with clubs, Black Panthers with clubs. Those are real Americans. But white people in wheelchairs are not real Americans. Only ethnic minorities who scream and yell and code stinkers who throw lipstick and whatever, they're real Americans. And speaking of real protests, how come no one's protesting the war in Afghanistan? I thought that it was like no war for oil. For the longest time, every lib said, no war, no war, no war for oil, Bush is a dummy, no war. And now all of a sudden, I don't see anything that says no war. They're doubling the troops every other day to Afghanistan. They say they need 100,000. Now it's like Vietnam all over again. I personally don't know what we're doing in Afghanistan. Can anyone explain to me why we're there? I remember that when Bush went into Iraq, the libs would call a show and say, we shouldn't be in Iraq, we should be in Afghanistan. That was the liberal credo. I don't know why Afghanistan. Why shouldn't we be attacking France instead of Afghanistan? Why Afghanistan? I don't understand it. We should be attacking Britain for what they do, a free speech over there. There are probably more potential terrorists in London than there are in Kabul right now. There are people in London screaming, we're going to convert you, kill you, blow you up. There's probably more potential terrorists in London right now than there are in Kabul. We should send 100 troops to England and save their butts again. So that's why I'm saying, why should I care? Oh, here's an update on Frankie Avalon. Born 1940, lives in Philadelphia. He's been married to the same woman until now, Catherine DeBell. That's incredible. That says something. Former teen idol, born 1940, Philly, Pennsylvania, born Francis Thomas Avalon. And how could you have a name at birth that's Avaloni? I could see if he was Italian, Francis Thomas Avaloni. But how does an Italian get a name like Avaloni? A-V-A-L-O-N-E. No, I'm not trying to be a wise guy. Because he sang about Avalon, the island off the coast of L.A. And yet it's like a perfect match. You sure it wasn't Avaloni when his ancestors came in? And the Irishman at Ellis Island said, all right, your name is Avalon? Avaloni instead of Avaloni? Do they have abalone in Italy? I know they have it in Northern California. Very expensive. $150 for abalone in an Italian restaurant here. What the heck is abalone? It's like scungili, Northern California scungili. It's overrated. With Levitra today at $10 a pill, what do you need abalone for? I mean, abalone, whatever. No, it's taken a lot of the folk remedies from yesteryear. I eat clams, eat oysters. All right, so it worked. It gave you know what. But you got some mercury poisoning. You got some heavy metals and metal poisoning as well. Yes, you might have gotten the reaction you wanted in that part of your body. But you took on a lethal, not lethal, you took on a little burden of heavy metals with the clams and the oysters from the, you know, the mud. Now you take a clean pill and a Levitra, boom, does the job. And the next day, you're fine. Okay, your eyes are off. You got a nice flush. They think that you got a disease like impetigo. You're sweating. They say one of the side effects of Viagra is that you have temporary blindness. I jokingly said when it came out in 98, that's not a side effect. That's a desired effect for old men. That way they don't have to see their wives. I thought that was funny. Never went anywhere. I think I was banned in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania because of that. I think that's where Viagra was made, wherever the factory is. By the time he was 12, Frankie Avalon was on U.S. television for his trumpet. Oh, it's like Dean Martin was a barber. Some people just have talent. Look at that, a trumpet already at 12. Played with Bobby Rydell in 1959, Venus, 5 weeks number one. I remember that. And wherever you went, you heard Venus, if you will. It was in your head, wherever you went. I have a question for you. Let's stop for a minute. This is going to bring a larger social question to the center here on the Savage Nation. In my day, there were men singers. Wherever you went, Frank Sinatra, Perry Como, Frankie Avalon, I can name Bobby Darin. There were some wonderful women singers. Everywhere I go today, I hear whiny lesbian chick singers. Everywhere you go, there's not one man singing. What happened to the men in the music industry? It's always about like a feminist with a nose ring and some kind of tattooing parlor that went bad, that she went to the tattoo parlor and a girlfriend wasn't there and the needle hurt her and everything's a whiny song. I don't even like shopping anymore. I can't take the music.
Savage.
Papa loves Mambo. Mama loves Mambo. Look at him sway with it, getting so gay with it, shout no lay with it, wow.
Wow.
Papa loves Mambo.
Papa loves Mambo.
So anyway, there's a lot of things to notice other than Obama being a Marxist. Walks like a Marxist, talks like a Marxist, has policies like a Marxist. It is a Marxist. He surrounded himself by people who are open Marxists. I can name five of them. They're proud Marxists. Some of them are proud Maoists. You have a communist regime. Now, if you wanted that, good. I don't think he ran on the Communist Party ticket. I think he ran as a centrist. But fundamentally, you have a guy who wants to take from those who produce and give it to those who don't. I mean, you know, we go back to the Bolshevik Revolution. And the Bolshevik Revolution was run not by black people, not by Hispanic people, not by Asian people, but by white, spoiled brats from the middle class and upper middle class of Russia who were guilty white liberals, who were embarrassed because of the Tsar, and they stirred up the entire Russian nation to kill the Romanovs. And then came 100 million deaths in the last century as a result of this desire for fairness. When it was finally over, 100 million people were dead as a result of the desire for fairness. But if you look at the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917 in Russia, you have to go back to the French Revolution to understand where the Bolshevik Revolution came from. I have studied revolutions, so don't think I'm a novice with this. Obama is a revolutionary. He's surrounded by revolutionaries. And at the end of the day, it's not going to be a very pleasant picture in this country. That's what I think. But I've made my point. Yes, the latest Rasmussen poll says his approval ratings have fallen to a new low of 47%, and that's because he has absolutely mishandled the healthcare debate by bashing people at these town hall meetings as Nazi, fascist, this and that, calling protesters evil, as Harry Reid did. It's backfiring on this administration. They made a big mistake here. Even liberals are starting to say Pelosi should go. So don't think that I'm making this up. But you've heard all of this before. I'd rather talk about the swine flu. People are dying from it. Do you know that? It's getting out of control. Now, before we talk about the swine flu, like I went today to have a blood test. You know, you get the periodic, the lipids, the this, the that, the PSA to see if your schmendrick is still hanging. And I said to the lady pulling my blood, the young vampire, I said, how are you? Not good. Lost a relative to the swine flu. I said, what? Yeah, he was healthy. Went to this, went to that, and he dead quickly. It's frightening. It's like 1918, man. Like, here comes the worldwide swine flu. Now, you got to remember that flu used to have country of origin, like Asian flu when I was a kid. Like, we walk around and go, oh, look, the Asian flu's coming. And no one thought twice about it. I still went to the Chinese restaurant and poisoned my system with those bad chips that they had on the table that killed half the Jews in Flushing. They had on the table. Remember the Chinese restaurants and how unhealthy the food was? They had those greasy, horrendous, like, bad. And the people ate them like it was like pork rinds. I don't know what they were made of. Ate them like crazy. Half the Italians and Jews in Queens prematurely died as a result of those chips. No one thought twice when there was Asian flu around there. They weren't going to get it in a Chinese restaurant. But they knew it started in China because China had bad hygiene. Lots of people, mud, biology textbooks, worms in the toes crawled in. It had nothing to do with the flu. But you expected the flu to come from a country like that. The teeming masses, bad hygiene. You know what I'm saying? No toilet paper, no toothbrushes at that time now. So you got to understand that this is the Mexican flu. They named it H1N1 to confuse you. It started in Mexico. As a matter of fact, I went on the air and said, close the borders, put National Guard's troop on the borders, stop the people from coming in from Mexico, don't let anyone go there. I was attacked by Janet Napolitano. I was called every name under the sun. Obama went on the air and said, oh, yeah, well, it's like talking about closing the barn door after the horses got out. And I'm saying, what are you talking about? There's not only one horse with the flu. I mean, the analogy didn't even work. And that's because I'm trained in epidemiology. I could have stopped the epidemic or limited it. Could have stopped it or limited it. But you didn't listen to me. You know, don't assume that I don't know what I'm talking about just because you don't like my politics. It could be that you don't like my politics because I do know what I'm talking about and it offends you for that reason. Anyway, whatever. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. I'm going to take some calls, okay? Winfred is an angry caller from New York on WOR. I have no idea what he's mad about, but he's getting the air. Winfred, go ahead. It's your floor.
You better believe it, buddy. You guys are mad because Obama is doing a good job, and I'm going to tell you something. The whole world's looking at you.
Let's take one sentence at a time. He's doing a good job?
I'm going to win again. He's going to win again.
Winfred, if you want to have a discussion, we can take each statement and discuss it. You're saying Obama's doing a good job with what, the economy?
Yes, he is. And let me
is he doing a good job with creating jobs?
Why you don't talk about the gays and protest that? Why you don't
You got on the air, I gave you some time, and you said Obama's doing a good job. I'm trying to find out where he's doing a good job. So where? Did he create jobs? We don't know where they are.
Okay. You see, you don't want to talk about those type of things.
I just asked you, what is he doing that's good?
He is the president, you bum, so get off my phone!
Excuse me? Sir, what are you on? What exactly, what drug did the government give you? What? I don't understand this. Let's see, the date is August 13th. Oh, it's the middle of the month. And by now, they've already sold off their prescriptions already. The meds are gone. They take a few the first few weeks when the social worker comes. They make them take them in front of them. Then a social worker doesn't want. And by the 13th, they're selling them on the street. Thanks, Winfred. I appreciate it. They're already sold in the gutter. What's now? Los Angeles. Jane, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey there. I just love the way you reminisce about, you know, the days when you were a kid. And I love hearing your stories. Would you tell a story about when you were a kid going to the doctor? What was that like for you?
Oh, that was wonderful. Yeah, they were super doctors in my day. They killed half my family with misdiagnosis and bad procedures. I think they smoked Chesterfield for the T-zone. Do I have any good memories? I don't even know. I didn't lie. I was afraid of them in those days. It was like weird. The doctor's offices smelled bad in those days. Not today anymore. Today they're aseptic. There's no scent and they don't look at you. It's actually better today. You go into a clinic today, they don't look at you. They look at the chart. They come into the office and look at the wall, at the chart. They don't look at you. At least in my day, they looked at you before they butchered you. No, they had the personal touch. I'm trying to think, was there a positive doctor? I don't know. I wasn't. I wasn't a sickly kid, thank God. I remember when my dad had a heart attack, the guy would come around with the electrocardiogram machine. That was like such a big deal. When he showed up in that car, the doctor with the machine, and he brought it in a black box, it was so incredibly frightening. You know what I mean? He had that secret machine with him, the EKG machine, and he'd come in. I mean, it was very serious. It was like an undertaker coming with a toolkit. And he would, you know, I was sad. You'd put it on with the gel on the heart, but then you have to see the chest with the hair and the white skin. Horrible. Because the Bible says, thou shalt not see the nakedness of thy father. Who wanted to look? But you had to watch to make sure the doctor didn't take out an organ to sell it on the side. Well, the reason I mentioned that, Jane, listen, I'm not saying, because I had a weird, like in some ways, a very weird upbringing. I told you my father had an antique store, which was really a stall, a couple of stalls inside a market of other guys who sold things, used goods, some antiques, this and that. And I would meet a high variety of people who would come down looking for bargains. You know, it was like the Antiques Roadshow Live that I grew up in. You didn't know what you were going to find there, what it was worth, what the value was, blah, blah, blah. So you had some rich people mixed in with some of the poor. They were always looking for some cheap, something cheaper than it was worth, blah, 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 to try and, you know, basically cheat the guy who bought it. And one of them was a doctor who, I can't name him, Dr. R, we'll say. That's how his name was, right? My father took me on the side when I was 9. He whispered to me, he said, you see that guy, Dr. R? I said, yes. He says, these are guys. This guy would cut out an organ. He'd sell your kidneys if he could on the side. If you went in for an appendectomy, he'd sell a kidney. I didn't know. I thought he was kidding. In other words, even then there were guys like that. You know. So, but you want me to think of a positive image of a doctor? Is that what you called about, Jane?
Yeah, you know, like, well, I just like...
Today I have positive... My doctors are good. I have wonderful doctors. Thus far, I haven't needed them for anything, so they're wonderful. Like, you know, the only bad experience I've had in the last few years is the colonoscopy. I would never recommend it for anyone unless there's a high risk in your family. The biggest scam in history is the colonoscopy. It's another one of those things where they're pushing it and pushing it. It's a procedure. You want to talk about health care? Do you think everyone needs a preventive colonoscopy? Let me ask you, are you sold on that?
Well, I think so because I had one recently, and my husband did too, and they told him to come back in 10 years, but they found a little something in me, so I have to go back in 3 years.
All right, fine. I said if you have a high risk or there's a reason or there's something shows up on a blood test, that's one thing. But the random screening through a colonoscopy is an extremely invasive procedure. Moreover, Jane, I'm going to tell you that some of the hygienic aspects of a colonoscopy bother me very deeply. And I'm talking specifically, without getting graphic, about the insert into the human orifice. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so they tell you it was washed before it went from the other person into you, or sterilized. How do you know? What, it went into an autoclave? Are you sure it went into an autoclave before it went into you?
It looks like a snake.
Go into it. It looks like a mortadella, if you wanted to know. In fact, I'm laying there on the table. It was last September that it went on, when I got it. And they wheel me in. You know, the procedure, they're like four people running around. I didn't really know the size of the thing that was going to go into me. I was already, I think, on a Valium. I don't know what they put me on. I was half out. I lean over on the cot, and I look at the girl. She's got what looked like an eel in her hand, a rigid eel. That's about the size of the thing. It looked like she went fishing before she came in. So I said to her, what's that? So she says to me, that's what we put into you before. I said, come on, you're kidding me. So then I made another joke because it was San Francisco, and the doctor laughed. And I woke up, and everything was whatever. Then they give you pictures in color now. Of the inside of your guts. That's terrific. If you're bored any night of the week, if you're bored of television, just open up the folder and look at the inside of your bowels. It's a heck of an evening's experience, I got to tell you. There's my transcending, there's my descending, there's my depressive colon, there's my ascending colon, there's my happy colon, there's my unhappy colon. All right, I think we've milked this one. Next case, 1-800-4... You got to admit, I'm having a good time. I'm like a child at this point in August. I feel like I've been in a car ride for eons. It seems like since history began, I've been in a car. And I've been asking my parents, when do we stop? And they say, very soon. and I can't stop the radio show. There's no way to stop. There's no way to go. There's nowhere for me to go. I have no desire to go anywhere on vacation. I made that mistake not too long ago. Horrible. Horrible. I'd rather stay here and sweat in the heat than complain about the air conditioning, than go in and out. So it's August. What do you expect? It's all good. Watching America go to you-know-where in a handbasket is a wonderful one-time experience. Try to envision the future where you'll be driving an old car. There'll be no new cars because nobody can afford them, and the manufacturers have been driven out of business by Obama and his greedy henchmen. Think Cuba. You'll be sitting around playing checkers or chess with your neighbors, none of whom you will know, because the ones that you know who had a brain will be in an internment camp or working in a sugar plantation somewhere in Cuba. And your medical care will be superb in the future. You'll have a doctor who doesn't speak English, or at best broken English, with a dirty smock with no medication. But you will have medical care. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Hey, Mambo. Mambo,
Mambo,
dance. Mambo Italiano. Hey, hey, Mambo. Mambo Italiano. Go, go, go. You mixed up a Siciliano. All you Calabrese do the Mambo like a crazy with a hey, Mambo.
All right. Please, this is horrible. So it was corny even in its day. It was corny. This song was corny the day it was made. I have nothing against Calabrese because San Francisco, the Italian community, is largely Calabrese. That's the truth. I didn't know Calabrese from calamari when I came out here. I grew up in New York. Who knew all of the divisions within families and ethnic groups and religions? But, you know, you get to know people, and it's all sorts of, like, conspiracies. He's a Calabrese, whisper, whisper. He's a Sicilian, whisper, whisper. It's worse than the Irish, that he's from Ireland, you know, one from north, one from south. It's worse than the Jews. He's a Litvak, he's a Galiciana. Every race has a whisper campaign going about something else within their own race. It's amazing. You think racism occurs only between one race to the other. You don't even understand what goes on within a race against one to the other. Everything, you think that it's all cohesive within a race. You're crazy. Look what the Arabs with each other. The Shia with the Sunnis and the Libyans versus the Algerians. You know, so whatever. And you want me to talk about health care. I've done it. I gave you plans yesterday. I want to talk about the H1N1 flu and how it could have been prevented, but that's water under the bridge. The government failed you there. Now the government's going to fail you when it starts to really take over, which it has already. It has. Now I'm going to give you something you're not going to like to hear. I'm going to tell you right now, one of your biggest risk factors is being around young children. All right, you don't like it? What are you going to do, protest me that I protest now? I had children. Every time they went to school in the flu season, they brought something home. It's just the nature of the beast. Children incubate, carry, and they bring it home. And then the parents pick it up, then they bring it to the office. So what are you going to do? You're going to stop living? You have to take certain precautions with your children. You're not going to say crazy? Okay, when they get to the door of the apartment or the house, make them take their shoes off. The minute they come in, you want to laugh at me? Make them wash their hands with hot water and a lot of soap. You know, common hygiene does help in these issues to a certain extent. There's no guarantee it's going to eliminate the risk factor of the disease, the virus having been brought into your house. But my friends, viruses are very susceptible to certain very basic hygienic practices. Unfortunately, they're not practiced in America to the extent they were when I grew up. My mother was a fanatic. You know, remember we used to say cleanliness is next to godliness, and then the hippies came along and they said filth is the closest thing to the devil, and they wanted to become the dirtier the better. They wouldn't even wipe their butts. You remember those days of the 60s? Everything was natural. They didn't brush their teeth. They're toothless now. Cleanliness is the closest thing to godliness. I grew up in a very uptight house in a very uptight age, thank God. Wash your hands, take off your filthy shoes at the door. What happened to those simple rules? The Japanese know to take... it's a liberal. The Japanese take off their shoes. They go, oh, look at that. Look how sacred. Oh, take off the shoe before the house. That they love. But if you do it in your house, somehow you're an uptight. You're uptight. Your mother was uptight, rather. You know what I'm saying? If a housewife from Queens said, take your shoes off, you just came in from the outside, she was somehow mentally unstable, and she had to be treated. The liberals looked down on her. She was uptight. But the minute the libs saw a Japanese, ooh, already it was superior. Oh, look at that. They take their shoes off. They can mimic that already. because a person from the third world did it somehow. Look, Bertrand Russell wrote it called The Superior Virtue of the Oppressed. I was very impressed with The Superior Virtue of the Oppressed. In fact, I was so impressed with The Superior Virtue of the Oppressed that I named my son after Bertrand Russell. I don't know if you know that. Now, I know Bertrand Russell was a left-winger and probably a commie. He was a wobbly for sure. But the man was a stone genius in mathematics. I'm one of the few people left in the world who actually read Principia Mathematica. Not in paperback either. Sorry, that's an inside joke. But here we are. 1-800. You want to talk about eggplant? I don't want to get too high and mighty because I'm going to say, who does he think he is? I got to hide the PhD. I got to hide the intellect. I got to do the truck driver and the calamari, and then you love me. It's a big mistake to try to go highbrow because then you start to think I'm not a nice guy and this and that. So I'll continue to play the clown. Play Pagliacci for me. That's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear, Pagliacci the clown, while I talk about eggplant. So I called my friend up this morning. I'm going to give him another plug, which he doesn't deserve. Lorenzo of the North Beach Restaurant. Because the guy can make an eggplant. And he, and let me just hear this loud, though. Loud. Whiny chick music in Macy's, what you got today. You understand why the people are mentally deranged in this country? Your children are listening to whiny chick music wherever they go, in dressing rooms. I can't even shop in Macy's anymore. Every time I go, compare it to two different cultural things. That's why I'd rather talk about eggplants. I said to him, I mentioned Savage eggplant and people are asking for it in the restaurant. Now, he didn't even know it. He doesn't listen to the show. So he said, how his eggplant is made. That's more important.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Are we live yet? Give me the countdown. Oh, I didn't know. What do I know?
Ring, tingling,
sitting here playing with the dog. What do I know when the show is live?
Sing beat the bell. Hearts will play tippy-tippy.
I was trying to think about you, Demon, when the moon hit you like a big pizza, that's in the morning. You know, not too long ago, I got a real shot. I really packed one on. I was drinking very heavily one night. You know, the moon does look like a pizza pie when you're drunk. That could explain why Dino wrote that song. I don't know if he wrote it. And that the craters, they look like mozzarella cheese while it's being melted. Come on. Look, I don't want to talk about Obama. What do you want me to do about it? He's taking the country in a direction it was never created to go. He is surrounded by a band of hardline left-wing fanatics and criminals. And we're in trouble. That's all. And I don't know what any good he's done. I could open it up and say, okay, Obama supporters, since I'm a fair guy, tell me what he has done that is good. There must be something he's done that's good. The economy, no. Jobs, no. He wrecked General Motors. That's gone, to make the world safe for Japanese and Korean cars. Tell me what he has done that is positive. I'd like to know. I'm open to it. For those of you who are Obamaites or who've had an obotomy. Those of you out there who've had an obotomy or who have been obotomized, you can call. And we were talking about so many other topics. How to make a good eggplant. The fact that in the 50s and 60s there were male singers. Today it's all like whiny chick music. Wherever you go. I can't take shopping anymore. I'm not just joking. The music's horrendous. I don't know what to do with the Muzak or wherever you go. It's always these whiny chicks. I don't hear a male vocalist who's singing with any kind of, let's say, masculinity. That's not abrasive, aggressive, and frankly offensive. I guess rap stars are males, but most of their lyrics are abrasive, offensive, and I can't listen to it. Hieroglyphics would be more interesting to me. So what are you going to do? The Italians don't sing anymore. They're gone. Where are they? What happened to the Italian singers? Where'd they all go? Look at the greats of that era. Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Bobby Darin. I can name what. Were there any more? Probably. I don't remember them all. Well, his singing was a little manicky, Louis Prima, you know. I don't know if that was singing. Play him for a minute so they'll know what I'm talking about. They don't think I'm drifting off too much with the cymbals.
When you're smiling.
That's not singing. I'm sorry. You know what I didn't like about this guy? Stop it. Louis Prima and Keely Smith. Keely Smith gave me a migraine every time I looked at her. I don't know why. If she was on like Ed Sullivan, I'd get a migraine the minute I saw her. Probably in association with a teacher with bad perfume or some hygienic problems that I could pick up with my olfactory senses. I don't really know. But Keely Smith threw me off immediately. But Louis Prima wore like a pointy hat that made him look like a moron. So I would put him out. I'd X him out. New York WR Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm just having a good time, Mike. But what am I going to do, sit here, wring my hands over Obama? What's on your mind?
Well, here's the deal. I finally found all the hyaluronic acid, all the chicken feet that you were looking for.
Oh, my God. You found chicken feet in Chinatown, right?
Yes. Actually, not in Chinatown. It's in New Jersey, an Asian market in New Jersey. It's a very funny thing. I believe maybe 86 days ago, because I listen to you all the time, Dr. Savage. And
I don't blame you. What else is there to listen to in the American media? It's very slim pickings out there, Mike.
That's right. But you know what? 86 days ago, when I was listening, I believe it was you were talking about the hyaluronic acid.
That's right. Let's tell the people what that was. I was saying, for the eye problem that I had, I was researching and I saw one obscure reference to the fact that the vitreous humor of the eye can be restored with hyaluronic acid, HA. And it's very difficult to find, but it's found in certain foods, if I remember correctly. One of them was chicken feet, which I used to eat when I was a kid. My mother would make chicken soup, and it came with feet. You cannot buy chicken feet anymore. You go to a butcher, they don't have them. They have chicken legs, but no chicken feet. They sell them to soup manufacturers, and the Chinese are wise. They won't buy a chicken unless they get the feet as well.
Right. Well, that day you were discussing it, Dr. Savage, believe it or not, like a half hour later, I was on my way to that particular Asian market, and I looked down, and I see a bucket full of chicken feet. I said, I have to somehow get these chicken feet to Dr. Savage. I don't know if I have to put them
on. Let's stop right there. I don't accept listen to food, listen to wine, listen to cake. Dear Dr. Savage, this comes to you from your friends from Castro Street. We made a special cake just for you. We hope you enjoy it. No, thank you. But, Mike, do you eat the chicken feet at all? Have you made anything out of them?
Dr. Savage, I eat everything. I try everything.
How do you make your chicken feet? What are you doing? You're frying them or boiling them or soup? What are you doing?
I actually never really had them yet, but...
Oh, all right. So you got them in a bucket waiting for me. Terrific. What a call. Good. Very good. Don't send them. I will not get them. I learned that in the beginning of radio. You never accept listener food. Dear Mike... this wine is just for you. We made it in our own winery. Love, Bob and Harold. We send that back. 1-800-449-8255. So here we are. Next case. I have the gavel here. Where's the gavel I was playing with it today? A gavel and a slammer. So the Chinese are smart with the chicken feet. They eat the whole bird the way the immigrants did in my day. You go, whoever heard of a chicken without feet? I'm going to give you an example. It's just a little. It's summertime. Give me. I remember to this day going to a live poultry slaughterhouse in the Catskill Mountains when I was a kid. It stank to high heaven in there. Today you don't even smell a chicken. It was called fowl for a reason. They stank. Poor things. They'd run around. The Jewish butcher would grab. The woman would pick out the chicken that was the most feisty, and she'd want that one to have its neck cut off, the head cut off, and the butcher would give it a grab and twist it, and then with a knife, a cut in the head, and as a kid, you're shocked. The bird ran without a head. You ever hear the phrase, he ran like a chicken without a head? And it would run and blood would spurt. The next thing you know, some old woman with a dirty smock with, like, no brassiere with, I'm sorry, it was horrible. And she would be plucking, and feathers were flying, and there was dirt in there. It was unbelievable. That was America when you could still get a chicken leg. I'll be right back. Savage.
Somewhere beyond the sea.
Well, I'm a social observer. That's what you do as a commentator. So it could be politics, food, wine, medicine. I give you my opinion. You may hate it. You may love it. You may whatever. I'm going to give you an example. I told you the singers today are all whiny chick songs wherever you go in supermarkets. To me, it's like it bends my mind. It's so bad. The like whiny in like Macy's. I can't even buy underwear anymore. I dread it. I can't wait to get out of there. But you look at the literature. So take Robert Frost from my day. Robert Frost. I'll read you the opening line. We had to read this in college. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen ground swell under it, and spills the upper boulders in the sun. Okay, Mending Wall by Robert Frost. But it ends with good fences make good neighbors. Why is Robert Frost not taught anymore? Why? Because he taught about something there is that doesn't love a wall, and good fences make good neighbors. Meaning, he was in favor of stone fences on Vermont farms, to clearly demark your land from your neighbor's land. He was not a communist. He was an American original. So now you have the thought police, the Marxists in the academics who said, well, we can't run Robert Frost because he's liable to teach the children about property. Good fences make good neighbors. That's no good because we need an open border with Mexico in order to get more drugs in, etc. In order to make sure that there's a war on our soil. We should have no fences. No borders. You hear that? Everything the liberals have taught has blown up in our faces. Everything from ultra-tolerance, I can go down the list. Everything has resulted in disaster. Then you read, go back to ancient China, Sun Tzu, The Art of War. By Sun Tzu's principles, we've lost already. China won. Subjugating the enemy's army without fighting is the true pinnacle of excellence, wrote Sun Tzu. Okay, I'll read it again. Subjugating the enemy's army without fighting is the true pinnacle of excellence. So, we send the most powerful navy on earth to the South China Sea, rather to the Sea of Japan, when Hillary Clinton's soulmate, Kim Jong-il, is launching rockets with pre-nuclear rockets into the sea, threatening us. And we have ships that could subdue him. Could have blown up his launching pads without triggering a war. He would have stopped a year and a half ago under Bush. Bush did nothing. The Navy is impotent. They may as well take the propellers off the navies and plant the ships and turn them into birthing clinics for as good as they're doing us. So why are our ships, which cost trillions of dollars the Navy to run, to build, the genius that went into it, the genius it takes to organize and run the U.S. Navy, is not being used? Why? Go back to Sun Tzu, The Art of War. Which is subjugating the enemy's army without fighting is the true pinnacle of excellence. So we lost. China has subjugated our army without fighting. They outsmarted us with a little help from our friends in Washington. They understood that Karl Marx was right when he wrote that when the last capitalist is hung, we will hang him with the rope that he sold us, or the rope that he manufactured, excuse me. Karl Marx. When the last capitalist is hung, we will hang him with the rope he manufactured. Okay, so the Chinese communists understand that. So they went to the greedy businessmen, starting a long time ago, but exemplified under Bill Clinton, when a little guy from the Bronx, whose name I still remember, I'm sure you do, Started with a parking meter company in the Bronx, built it into Loral Space and Technology. He wanted a cheap launch of his satellites, so he took missile technology that was developed for the military. He finagled his way into the Democrat Party. He was the biggest contributor to the DNC. He got the methodology, and he used that technology to launch rockets, to launch his satellites. Loral Space and Technology started with parking meters, worked his way into the Democrat machine. I think you know whose name. Anyone who knows this guy's name wins a free prize today. Anyone can call and give me the name, and you're going to get to it. Because I remember these things. Here's a man, in my opinion, made Bernie Madoff look like a saint for what he did to this country. So now, to top it all off, when he gets the technology to launch the satellites, he says it will never be shared with the Chinese military. We wake up the next day. The Chinese military is using the rocket technology. You see, because before that, their rockets were crashing on the pads. The Chinese couldn't launch a rocket very successfully. But good old Bernie taught them with American military technology how to launch a rocket. After which they stopped launching just, you know, harmless satellites. They were able to launch deadly missiles that could kill us with nuclear weapons. All because of capitalist greed. You understand how this works? When the last capitalist is hung, we will hang him with the rope he manufactured. So it doesn't have to be rope. It doesn't have to be taken literally. It can mean with when the last American city is knocked off the planet, it will be with a rocket that they manufactured for us. Whatever you want to say it. When the last American car is manufactured in America, it will be because the factories that we have were given to us by greedy congressmen and greedy senators. I can go down the list. So you say, well, what can you do about it? Right now, all I can do is talk about it. It's illegal in England to speak your mind, as you well know. Soon it's going to be illegal here. So I'm enjoying the last days of America. I hope you enjoy them with me. I'm having a wonderful time enjoying the last days of freedom in America. I'm having a wonderful time. So if you want to join me in the last days of freedom in America, call me at 1-800-449-8255. Here are some of the stories on the website. Obama's Sturgeon General picks Obama's Sturgeon General. Did I say that right? Sturgeon General? Obama's Sturgeon General advises Burger King. What do you expect? She herself should stop eating a little on the burger. She looks like she could use a diet. Imagine this. Her job as a Surgeon General is to help Americans to get thinner and healthier. She advises Burger King. That's all. She ought to stop chomping on the cheeseburgers herself. She might lose a little weight. She might look a little better. Long lines as free health care offered. Where is this? I don't care. Whatever. Town hall face-offs erode health support. Michael Savage's favorite New Yorker profiles. Oh, I want the picture of me up from the New Yorker. Guys, who's ever doing my website? Godric, Art, I want the picture. Food giants say U.S. running out of sugar. What? Large U.S. food companies have been pushing the Obama administration to ease sugar import curbs, threatening higher consumer prices and possible job losses. We're running out of sugar? When the hell did that happen? DNA proves Edward's fathered child. All right, you could look at the positive in that. At least it was with a woman. You know what I mean? Thank God. At least, you know, he was Randy, but it was with a woman. We got to say, today with what goes on, we got to say thank God for that. Thank God it wasn't the other way. All in Spectator says protests are not representative of America. Oh, he is. A turncoat like him, he's representative of America. Obama's out of touch with America, says Dorothy Rabinowitz in the Wall Street Journal. Illegal alien debate at heart of litter case. Oh, wow. In other words, they're leaving litter all over the Arizona desert? That can't be so. They all come here to work. They're just oppressed minorities. Cheney uncloaks Bush frustration. Not interested. I was not a big Cheney guy in the Cheney era. Widespread use of psychiatric drugs on foster kids. Oh, boy. Ooh, powerful mind-altering drugs to manage unruly kids. Like, I'm shocked. The whole foster care business is a racket. It doesn't mean there aren't a few sincere people, but boy, oh boy. Then on the bottom we have a pinup. Not dirty. And it's a picture of a 1950s girl, a pinup, with a sweater on, sweater girl. And I wrote, the 50s weren't so prudish. They cut the picture off. Why'd you cut it off at the bottom? She wasn't showing anything down there. There was no camel, whatever. I'm just showing you how beautiful girls were in the 50s with the pink sweater and all of that. You think that girls today are beautiful, and they are. There was always beautiful women all through the ages, going back to whatever. The first cave woman who put a little pig grease in her hair was already a beauty. But I'm saying in the 50s, they were beautiful, too.
Savage.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Boiled or fried?
I'm satisfied as long as I get my kiss.
I never liked these songs, truthfully, as a kid. I wasn't into them. Looking back now, all right, some of them are okay. Corny, I don't understand it. Turn it off, please. It gives me the creeps, just remembering certain images from that time. This is the Savage Nation. We're talking about the matzo balls of wrath or the grapes of wrath, whichever you prefer. Let's go to Los Angeles. Stan, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, you mentioned, you know, going to the live chicken market as a kid. And
yes.
Plenty of people out there that have that experience. They're the last of a generation. But my dad had a live chicken market, and it was kosher and non-kosher.
Where? What city? In what city?
Jersey. And people would say it was a slower time. Women weren't working, and it was mainly the old-timers, people from Europe. Because
yes, of course. Even the younger women at that point wouldn't go into a live chicken market. But you grew up in it?
Well, I mean, I used to help out on Sundays, and that was my dad's livelihood and my grandfather's before him, the chicken market.
Who cut the chicken's head off? You did?
Well, no, my father, what they did was they'd slit the throat and you'd pass out. You know, you have no air. It was humane.
I don't know where I went in the Catskills. It must have been in Hurleyville. I don't remember where. They cut the head off and the chicken ran and then blood spurted out.
Oh, no, not at our place. But
so this guy must have been a sadist, this butcher that I knew. I knew something was wrong.
But here's what your mom got. You got the feet. You got the neck. This is what you
make. That's right.
You got the chicken.
That's right. That's right. What's the good of making a soup without feet? There's nothing in it.
Exactly. And the
it's like a sterilized chicken that you throw in the water. Nothing comes out. There's no broth. The broth comes from the feet. All of the good stuff is in all the organs in the feet.
Skin was white because it was corn fed.
They were natural chickens in those days.
Steroids. 6 weeks.
Today they're tortured and in a cage. They can't even move around, the poor little things. Well, Lara, you know, if you read religious books, truthfully, even whether it's the Jewish religion, if you go into it, they do say that you are what you eat. A man is what he eats, and a man must bless every food that he eats properly, or it becomes poison in his body, and the man himself becomes contaminated by not blessing it because God created it. But if you want to go into food, is that we are what we eat? I mean, there's no question about it that the people today are denatured because of the foods.
And the old-timers would not go into the supermarkets when they started having in cellophane.
That's right. They didn't trust it. They said it was an old chicken, right?
Well, the women would squeeze them to see. They'd look in the eyes better than a veterinarian to see if they were sick. And if you went in on Sunday, you got the last chickens. When my dad, rest in peace, took the feathers off, they'd be black and blue because those women had squeezed those chickens all week to find the
Oh, my God. You mean the chicken would be black and blue or your father?
No.
I'm joking. May rest the beast. Why? You mean the chicken was squeezed by the women?
Not really, but you never.
Wait, wait, wait! You're really mixing the who was black and blue?
The chicken, because the women wanted to feel how. Remember now, it had feathers.
Yeah. So the chicken's skin was black and blue, right?
Yeah, because it had feathers on.
Yeah, but those women also squeezed like young boys' cheeks till they turned black and blue. If I walked down a street in the Bronx, I was afraid to run into an old woman. They'd grab your cheek and squeeze it.
Got to remember, these women were wringing out clothes. Their wrists, their grip were stronger.
Don't tell me. They could knock your head off, those women.
Weren't sitting around watching TV eating bonbons, you know.
What do you think I was joking when I said the matzo balls of wrath? I wasn't kidding. And then Beowulf, my producer, said, how about the grapes of wrath? I said, okay, there's a title in that one. Stan, let me ask you something. When you go shopping today, having grown up in the age of the live chicken, you still can get them in Chinatown, by the way. Here in San Francisco, I think, I see them in cages. The Chinese will not buy the country Chinese person will only buy a chicken that's in a cage. And they kill them in there.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Savage, the federal government got the law changed to say you can call a chicken that's in cellophane in a supermarket fresh. And it's got to be between 1 day and 10 days old.
Oh, my God. 10 days old is fresh. You're eating carrion.
Exactly.
You may as well be eating roadkill.
Right, and it's 26 degrees. degrees until it gets to the market, which is frozen. Then it's 41 degrees, which is refrigerated.
Oh, my God. Even chickens are fake today, in other words.
The taste is altogether different.
It is. I do. I understand. Food is about taste. It's not just about the nutrients it provides. It's also about taste. It goes right back to my discussion of eggplant earlier, by the way.
One other thing.
So, Stan, you can't eat a thing then today. Everything's disappointing.
Yeah, who knows what fresh meat once tasted.
But, I mean, you're in L.A., right? You're in Los Angeles. You're calling from L.A.?
I'm calling actually from Hollywood, Florida.
Hollywood, Florida. Okay, down there the food is you can't eat anything there.
By the time we get it, it's like...
No, but I'm saying in Hollywood, Florida, there's no food at all in any cuisine.
No, unless you go to Joe's Stone Crab.
I'll tell you what the only thing I eat in South Florida that I like is Cuban food. They got the best group of fish I've ever eaten.
Yeah, excellent.
Oh, my God. There was a place I was eating in when I was there. Every day you could get a lunch, $8.95. It came with beans. It came with rice. It came with group of fish that was fried perfectly. I mean, you know, a pan griddle fried, no grease. Then it had plantain on the plate. Then they gave you bread, $8.95. I couldn't believe how they do it. The Bay Area where I live, people are so used to being ripped off, they don't even know what food value is anymore, Stan.
Oh, yeah, no, but...
That's one thing about South Florida is the food value is better there. And that's because, thanks to the, and I'm not being sarcastic, the large numbers of poor immigrants from Haiti and the Caribbean, they're not going to pay any more than that. $8.95 is still a lot of money for an average guy. So if he wants to go into lunch, he better get a real lunch for the money, right?
Oh, sure. But that you went to a local place. If you go to a tourist place, of course, you're not going to get that.
Oh, forget it. Today you get a Bud Light for $8.95 in San Francisco. That's if you look. How about the wine I love? This drives me crazy. You go past the restaurant in the San Francisco area. I don't know if it's like that by you. And they order a glass of wine. They give them a half a glass of wine. That's the latest racket. And they it's 3 ounces. Oh, it's 6. It's not. What are they doing? I've argued for years. Fill the damn glass. Charge me double. I don't want a half a glass of wine. There's something wrong with accepting a half a glass of wine. When did this racket start?
I don't know. And are you getting the wine that you ordered? How do you know that?
Oh, come on. That's like buying gas with water in it. Wine that you ordered. Are you kidding me? It's all $1 chuck.
Stu, you think you're getting...
That's why I drink beer and vodka. It's distilled and the other thing. Don't mix the grain and the grape. That's all. I don't mix the grain and the grape. I mix the grain and the vodka. That's all. Always works for me. No hangover, no headache. It's perfect. You mix in wine with that brew, you're finished. You're off. It's like worse than psychiatric drugs. If you mix grape and grain, it's worse than psychiatric drugs. Oh, God, I'm having a good time because I'm off the political. I swear to God, wow. What a relief. Ming, I feel better. I can breathe. I'm looking forward to this evening. Last night I was drained. I'm dead from days of telling you about the health care and Obamacare and what you need to do to rein it in. I give up already. No one listens to me. I write bestsellers. Someone reads them. And nothing gets translated, not to the Republicans, not to the Democrats. But my listeners, they read, they buy, they say, you're right, you're a genius. How come no one listens to you? How come you're so smart and no one hears you? Well, I'm so smart they do hear me. They heard me in Britain. I'm so smart they banned me from the country. They don't want my ideas getting across the border to that island nation. They'd be better off being taken over instead by the immigrants they let in, who came and said, we need asylum, let us in. We're not going to do anything. We need more of us. Come, I'm going to bring in my grandmother and 75 children. All right, bring them in because liberals believe in open borders and liberalism and ultra-tolerance. We need more ethnic minorities. Britain is too white. Get rid of the Union Jack. The next thing they know, they wake up and there's no country anymore. There's no flag. There's no country. And they're scared to death that they're going to be thrown out of their own country. So they throw me out because I tell them that unless they wake up, they're going to have no nation. I'm their enemy. Well, guess what? As I told you at the beginning of the show, Winston Churchill was banned from the BBC before World War II for 6 to 8 years. They would not let Winston Churchill speak because they said he was provoking unnecessary hatred, with Germany. He was warning them what Hitler was doing. He was warning them that Hitler would take over England. He was warning them Hitler was building up the military. He was building ships. He was building planes. Winston Churchill was not allowed to say this on the BBC because they said he was creating tension with their friends in Germany. So you look back and you say to yourself, maybe the German Gestapo controlled the BBC, which was controlled at that time by ultra-liberals. So if that is true, it is possible, is it not, that our media and the liberal media of England is in fact controlled from a long distance by enemies of the West, that they have controlled the media now, almost lock, stock, and barrel by the empty suits and empty skirts that they put in there to talk, by keeping out the real Americans, by keeping out those like me, like you, like those at the town hall meetings. You're not allowed to be heard from? You're not America? Only these empty suits are America? Acorn is America? The Black Panthers with clubs at voting booths? That's America? Arkansas, Ralph, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you're like the Will Rogers of our time.
Thank you.
Your humor is commentary upon your life and things that you've seen and done, mixed with a little bit of steroids to hit people between the eyes when they need to know the facts. You just keep it up. Keep it going.
Ralph, you know, don't go away so fast. You're one of the only callers in my 15-year career who even knows the Will Rogers relationship to the Savage Nation. I said it once or twice in the early years of my radio days when I was a local host. And I even said, Will Rogers was a great, great entertainer. He got up there and he twirled a lariat, right? And he twirled it on the stage. And while twirling that line, he would tell folky stories, right? And I said, basically, that's what I'm doing here.
Yep. Commentary upon American life.
Ralph, may I ask what you do for a living?
Well, Michael, I drive a truck.
I am not surprised that there is wisdom in a truck driver, Ralph. In fact, there is more wisdom in the average truck driver than there is in the average politician.
At times, I think that's quite right. Some of us.
And you know, Ralph, I'll tell you something else I'm going to say about long-haul truck drivers in particular. You guys have hours and hours and hours and hours on the American highways. You see the world in a different way than we do. You're sitting there. People don't realize the freedom of the road, number one, and the freedom to think. You're all alone in this capsule. You have unlimited time, and your mind is active in that truck. Your mind is working, is it not?
It sure is.
All right.
It sure is.
What I want to do, Ralph? Tell me if you think I could organize this. Do you think I could get a billboard campaign going on big rigs across America to make our congressmen stand up for my free speech and say, free Michael Savage? What if we got with an 800 number to call a congressman to make them do something for my freedom? Do you think I can get the truckers behind me?
Oh, you probably could get some guys slap some stickers on the back of their wagons. I'm sure somebody would go along with it.
Well, but how many independents are left? They're all owned by conglomerates, aren't they?
Oh, there's still a lot of independent guys out there.
Yeah, but then you got the Obamaites now in the Teamsters. I wonder how that would affect the trucks.
Well, they wouldn't affect very much. They're kind of a low breed right now, low numbers compared to what company and independent drivers are.
Really? Oh, so the Teamsters, of course, lost their power after the age of Jimmy Hoffa, right? Are they on the upswing now?
I don't really feel that they are. I think they're kind of on a low ground right now. They're kind of hurting real bad with the economy the way it is, too. You know, a lot of Teamster shops have had to cut down on number of drivers they had out of the terminals and things like that, you know.
Well, Ralph, to say something positive, I remember talking to a trucker in Pennsylvania 15 years ago who told me what life was like for a long-haul trucker before the Teamsters and how it improved after the union organization. As violent as it was, as corrupt as the officials were, he told me they made the truck driver's life livable, while before that they were almost unlivable.
That was probably a little bit before my time. I started driving back in 84, but I heard the stories and,
That's the truth. In some ways, there's always good and there's bad, and I thank you for the call. You look at that from a larger perspective, and all you hear about is the negativity and and it's all true. But how did it affect the average truck driver? His life improved. It's like you look at the foundation of a nation. Let's take any nation. I can pick one out of a hat. Israel, ancient Israel, King David. Israel was composed of various tribes, just nothing more than tribes. King David made a nation, the ancient nation of Israel, by killing all of the other leaders of the other tribes. So in violence and blood, there was formed a nation. The same is true for the Kingdom of Hawaii, at the time the Kingdom of Hawaii. King Kalakaua, right? I think that was his name. The king killed all of the other kings on the other islands, got rid of all the princes that were loyal to those kings, and he forged a nation, the Kingdom of Hawaii. How did he do it? Through violence and through blood. And so you say, well, that was terrible what he did, but he created a nation. And so, look, ladies and gentlemen, life goes on. If you study history, it's filled with horror and violence and blood. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There goes my heart. There goes the one I love.
Yeah, I used to love listening to Nat King Cole. I don't know why there some people you like, some you couldn't stand. I think it was King Kamehameha, by the way. I was wrong. I said King Kalakaua. That was the name of a bar I used to go to, I think, on Prince Street. I think it was King Kamehameha. I forgot my Hawaiian lore. Now everyone drives a Dodge Charger and eats at Tubby Boys and hates the mainlanders. What do they want their own nation for? What are they going to do with it? They're going to give up all those big cars and hamburger stands? What are they going to eat, poi? What are they going to drive around and they hate the mainland? Get rid of the Haole in Hawaii. Get rid of the Haole. Ooh, Haole no good. It's our land, man. Get rid of the Haole. Okay. What are you going to have left? Like poi jerky. I want to show you what a comma can make in a sentence. Let's say there was a dish called potato jerky. Whatever that would be. Potato jerky. So you go in a Jamaican restaurant. And you say to the guy, I want a potato jerky. Now, if you do it with a comma, I want a potato jerky, the guy could kill you. But if you say, I want potato jerky without the comma, then it's food. You understand what one comma can mean? How complicated language really is? I was thinking about that. Let's say you had a dish, potato jerky. I'll say it again. So you go into a Jamaican restaurant. The big guy comes over. He's Jamaican. He says, I want potato jerky. Now, if you say it with a comma, he can cut you, he can slash your throat because you're calling him a jerk. But if you say, I want potato jerky, then you're asking for a food. You're not insulting him. You see what can happen in the world if you don't understand language? I was just thinking about that during the break because I'm bored. What a difference a comma can make. You understand? The reason I played There Goes My Heart is because I remember, sadly, in the studio I'm in right now, I got a picture of my dad over me. It's summer. It's a summer picture. He's in an undershirt. God bless you, Dad. I do hope there's heaven, man. I really hope all these things I've resisted all my life. Oh. What I've put up with, the impulses I have, if only there's a heaven, I hope you're there and you're waiting for me to yell at me again. But he loved the song around the time he had a heart attack called There Goes My Heart. I can remember to this day. It was heartbreaking in a way. You know, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, I'm just reflecting. It's summer. Every time in summer I go through this crap. I wish the fall was here already. I get maudlin in the summer. You're supposed to be happy in the summer, right? Hay and hay rides. Does anyone do a hayride anymore? That was another thing. I did it once in my life as a kid. What fun it was. Straw in your pants. It was fun with the girls, just being innocent, age 11. A lot of people were innocent till 19 in my day and age, 17, 18, 19. Today, they're innocent till around 7. 7 or 8 already, they look like their mother, like they just came from a party, like a club at 7 years of age. They look like hungover. Look what happens to the kids today because of that. Anyway, I don't want to be too maudlin, but the summer is not... Why do you have to be happy in the summer? Long, lazy days, fishing. Then you go back to school as a kid. Remember, you have to write an essay. The teacher would ask you, all right, children, write down what you did this summer. And I would always start every year the same thing. This summer, I went hunting, fishing, camping, and swimming. To this day, I can remember it. I remember to this day, BB guns, we'd hunt for garmint, little like rodents, try to kill them. Remember my father, he was brave. He killed a copperhead with a stick and a rock. There's a guy who owned an antique store, have the guts. It was like it was a copperhead in Spring Glen. Everyone ran away. Copperhead. Everyone knew what a copperhead was. Because my father got the stick, got the rock, and killed it. Took guts. I don't know where he got it from. Copperhead. So hunting. Then we went fishing for catfish, I remember. Hunting, fishing. Camping, we'd camp out. And hiking was my favorite. We built teepees. My favorite tree was the birch bark because I knew the Indians made canoes out of it. I always loved useful trees. I wrote books about it years later to show you how much I am in tune with nature. But the life I lead now with a microphone in the political world is so antithetical to my actual nature that I'm thinking of going back to nature.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here are some of the things we've been talking about on the show today. American anger and the media and the freedom of the Lockerbie terrorist. I guess he's allowed the terrorist who blew up a plane over Lockerbie, Scotland and killed over 200 people 20 years ago is now being considered for release from a prison in Scotland. I guess he'll be allowed into the United Kingdom. In fact, he is in the United Kingdom. So let's see. The UK government will consider releasing a mass murderer, but they won't consider letting Michael Savage into the nation. Unless I repudiate remarks I never made, welcome to the New World Order. American anger in the media. You know that anger is spreading across the U.S. The people have seen Obama's program, it's socialized medicine, and they're frightened, and they're enraged. And for the past week, you've seen that rage expressed in town hall meetings after town hall meeting. Real working Americans standing up against the machine. But the midstream media is doing everything it can to play down the town hall meetings and to defame the people who speak out at them. They've accused protesters of carrying Nazi swastikas. What you may not know is that some of these people are agitpropers put on by the Obama administration itself. I don't think you understand that the people bringing swastikas and guns are actually paid by the Obama machine, left-wing machine, to make the protesters look bad. It's right out of Saul Alinsky's playbook. It's right out of the ex-Soviet Union. Have you read about that fact? Not in your local newspaper. The media has even dredged up people to say that they were attacked by racist right-wingers. Made up, of course. Again, it's false stories. Here's someone that CNN managed to find, Maxine Johnson, screaming racism.
Before I knew it, I had four or five officers on me and one on him. And I said, wait a minute, he took my sign. And then four other officers began to drag me away. And I began to say, I'm going to press charge. And I began to say, Obama, Obama. We went to the meeting purposely to support the voice of the people in our neighborhood, which is predominantly all black and some Caucasian, to make sure those people would get health coverage.
So you see now it's racist to be opposed to Obama's health care plan. If you're against socialized medicine, you must be some kind of Nazi. Listen to this. She makes the Nazi connection even more explicit.
As we looked around the room, there were several people in the room that had other signs. There was a person that had a sign that said, Obama's like Hitler. And then there were other people with signs. They were not black. There was about 3,000 people, 30 African Americans. And then I asked another, I said, what was the problem? It was Rosa Parks, a historical figure. Why was it such a threat? And the woman said, ma'am, it wasn't Rosa Parks. You were the threat. You was a black woman. And then as the police officer took our report, they said, ma'am, we cannot guarantee your protection. You must leave this town. We cannot protect you. You don't know these people. They're nasty. It was clearly racial.
And this is the worst of all. Listen to her pure, unadulterated racism. And remember, she was set up to talk out by the same machine from Chicago that brought you Barack Obama.
You know, we were clearly the minority. If I was a white person, this would not have happened. In respect to Senator Claire McCaskill, she's not black. She doesn't know the struggle that black people go. When I go in my neighborhood with a sign, they don't attack me. You know what? As I watched the video coverage on the TV and the internet, I really think that people are still upset that we have an African-American president. We still have some issues in America, and that's clearly obvious.
What's the difference? I know what's going on. I'm watching you-know-what go to where in a basket. You watch the fog coming into the Golden under the Golden Gate at the end of the day. it reminds you of God. I mean, you know, if you're not a religious person, you can become a religious person. You watch the fog rolling over the hills of Sausalito down onto the water, or vice versa. You watch the fog lifting and the sun breaking through, and the sun breaks through. It's only people who live out here who understand, well, people who have an idea how beautiful nature can be. And then you read, you know, and we're playing Frankie Avalon for that reason, because I was talking about Catalina Island. Many people have heard of it. And it's amazing when you look at it and you read about it and you realize that it's part of a geological change. Catalina Island began as a part of the seabed, but a series of complicated plate movements created the island at least 20 million years ago. A chain of volcanic islands rose from the seabed off the California coast between 24 million and 5.3 million years ago. Complex earth movements shifted the island some 150 miles northward from near the Mexican border to its present position. Now listen to this. A spectacular ancient shoreline, complete with sunken river valleys, lies 80 feet below the Pacific, a mile west of the island. It's amazing to me when you realize that it is just a blink of the eye what we're living through here. The complicated lives that we lead, where we think we're building a future, and that there's always going to be a tomorrow like the tomorrow that your father had or the tomorrow that you thought was waiting for you, can be wiped out in the blink of an eye. Never mind from man, but from nature itself. It's all a miracle. That's why if you read the Jewish prayer book, one of the earliest prayers, people don't understand this, one of the first prayers in the Jewish prayer book, which is the first of the monotheistic religions to have a prayer book, in it, there is a statement that says, thank you, God, for many things. And one of the things it says is, our body is filled with many orifices and many cavities. And if even one of these should close, even for a moment, we would not exist. And the religious pray to God for that, because they recognize every morning the miracle of waking up. Now think about the miracle of that in terms of conceptualizing that every breath you take is a miracle. I mean, I don't know if you could exist in that world. It's hard to believe that anyone could walk around, that in every breath they take, they realize that God gave them that breath. And what to do with that breath is the issue. What are you doing with it? It's too complicated to go into. I'm not here to give you any Norman Vincent Peale job here. But it is a miracle when you think about it. I mean, I don't know if you understand how miraculous life is. Now we come to America, the greatest experiment in the history of man, a land where freedom was supposed to be granted to every man. But the freedom was not free, and the freedom was not to be given to you by a government. It was a freedom that was given to you by God, and a freedom you were supposed to maintain, or else it would be taken away from you by despotic individuals around you who were no different than the British, but in some cases, maybe worse than the Brits who once ruled this land as a colony. And now we have a government that may as well be a government of a foreign country, a government that is as foreign to the people, perhaps even more foreign to the people, than were the British in the early days of the colonies of the United States of America. You know what I'm talking about. It's summertime. Beware the Ides of August. Play me some music. I'll take some calls. 1-800-449-8255. I had the nightmare again last night. What? What is this? Yeah, turn it off. It's not my kind of music. I'm in the mood more for Frankie Avalon, something like Catalina. Who sings Catalina? Because when I grew up in the Bronx, to me the idea of Catalina was like nirvana, that anybody could have a nice pastel shirt, a good haircut, and spend his days going to Catalina with pretty, you know, like bunnies, you know, whatever. I was schlepping to high school working in a clothing store after school. He was dancing off to Avalon in some Chris Craft. Right? I mean, doesn't this evoke that whole era? Like the good-looking Southern Californian? You should see them on the streets of Berkeley now. Take a look at them at the age 50, what they look like. Busted suitcases, junkies, it's horrible. You know, there's a curse to being handsome when you're young and good-looking and successful. It doesn't work all the time. Sometimes it's good to be, instead of tall, dark, and handsome, short, white, and ugly. Let me tell you, there's an advantage to it. Who says tall, dark, and handsome is the norm anyway? They used to say, oh, she likes, you know, remember the Americans say he's tall, dark, and handsome? Well, there's nothing wrong if you are. But what if you were short, white, and ugly? What are you supposed to do, commit suicide?
as when we're just some more.
I'm just having fun here. You know, boys just want to have fun. You think I'm going to get excited over Obama? I mean, what he's going to do is what he's going to do. You think they're going to give up because you discovered that he's a Marxist? You think he's going to go away? You think he's going to stop being a Marxist because you found out he's a Marxist? Ha! You think that because you discovered that the 51st Ward of Chicago is now the United States of America, they're going to stop behaving as though Al Capone took over America? We don't have an Elliot Ness. Can you raise the music? What am I, going deaf here? I can't hear it. I'm supposed to get high from the music. I can't hear the damn thing.
If I have to swim, I'll do it forever.
All right. Yeah, where is he today with Annette Funicello? I never cared for her as a figure in the Mickey Mouse days. She was... Remember Annette Funicello? Like, I don't understand her, how she got where she was. She was never really attractive. Talk about heartthrobs from that day. I'm trying to remember now. I'm just drifting. Because I don't care about politics for the moment. Who was a hot, like, movie star, teenage chick in my day? I'm trying to think of where they are. Carol Lindley, I remember. I used to go to dark movie theaters and imagine Carol Lindley was my girlfriend. Where is she today? Probably somewhere, I would imagine, in Palm Springs with a transfusion tree and a walker somewhere. The skin worn out from the sun, like a prune face. I hope not. But generally, that's how it ends up. And earlier rather than later from the dissipation. You know, either that or they found God early on in life and it saved them. But usually not. Usually there were party types and by 50, or 40, washed up by 30. Shot by 40 and a basket case by 50 with the tree and the cigarette in a trailer somewhere in the back of a B-movie. Like a scene where the daughter comes, how are you, Mom? And Mom is staring off into the desert with, you know, stone blue eyes. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Savage and the Soviet-style media. England has told me that in order to be allowed back into their nation, I must repudiate views which they have attributed to me, which I have never held or expressed. They sent me a high-handed letter, actually to my lawyers, in which they stated the following. It was emphasized that the onus is on your client to publicly renounce the statements which form the basis of the decision to exclude him. Any such repudiation must be genuine and comprehensive. And persuade my client that this is a true shift of position, in which case my client alone would be prepared to consider this. Of course, I am not alone in being the target of British censorship and oppression. I don't know if you know this. Winston Churchill said that in the years leading up to World War II, he was banned from the BBC. Banned from the BBC. Churchill banned from the BBC for a period of up to 8 years. Churchill was put into political exile, where he was labeled an extremist, at a time when his voice and free speech were needed the most. And at this time, my voice is needed to stand up against an international push for neo-Marxism and an attempt to suppress free speech. What England has done to me is nothing less than the most base form of Soviet-style oppression. In the 1930s and 40s, if a member of the Communist Party stepped out of line and all Russians were required to be members of the party, then they would be put on trial, required to publicly renounce their incorrect views, and then be executed. All of this would be covered by the state-controlled media in the exact way the state wanted it covered. Today is not that much different. Today, no major media outlet has run the story of England's insane demand that I repudiate statements that I never made. Today, I finally spoke to a newspaper reporter who was interested in the story. But this is several days after the story first came out. We expect that from time to time in the course of history, individuals and groups will try to gain power at the expense of people's basic freedoms. We expect that dictators and despots will arise from time to time. What we do not expect is that they will get their way without a fight. We expect that patriots will rise up and decry the tyrants, even if this means putting their lives on the line. And we expect that a few brave souls in the media will speak up when an entire nation tries to blot out one man's freedom of speech. Unfortunately, there have been very few so far. Unfortunately, we have a Soviet-style media that works hand-in-hand with the government's demands for absolute control, whether the story is health care or Michael Savage. I want you to listen to something I saw on CNN. The Crescent News Network, CNN, today had their girl in Baghdad, Christiane Amanpour, do a report on Hamas Boy Scout camps. You won't believe this propaganda. Even from Christiane Amanpour, she's outdone herself.
The Hamas government runs religious and recreational camps for more than 100,000 children. The boys participating in this one call it Boy Scouts, but it's more like boot camp. 12-year-old Mohammed is honing his skills. Without Boy Scouts, he says, there wouldn't be much to do.
We'd be bored, not having fun at all, and hate our lives. We'd be sitting at home, reading the Quran.
And what are they doing in this Boy Scout camp? They're preparing Palestinians, little boys, to kill Jews. Listen to this little terrorist in training.
Mohammed and many of the other boys here lost friends during the war. This may be a welcome release for him. But even at this young age, he's absorbing a message.
We come to the camp to have fun and train for Boy Scouts so we can build up our bodies, have power, so we'll be able to fight the Israelis.
So Christiane Amanpour put camps that prepare Palestinian boys to kill Jews on a higher level than Boy Scouts in the United States of America. They say that our Boy Scouts are evil because they believe in God. Of course, she covers for the Palestinian boys and say they don't really teach violence.
Emad, the camp leader, insists that they're not teaching violence. But in war-torn Gaza, they are teaching self-defense.
We try to change their perspective from one that is vicious or war-related to one that encourages them to be kids, to play.
When they're older, he says, they can then join the fight for a Palestinian homeland.
After you grow up, you can be recruited to liberate the land.
And what do these boys want to be when they grow up? Listen.
When we asked the boys what they wanted to be when they grow up, not surprisingly, they all said the same thing.
I want to be a defender of the country.
I want to be a policeman and defend the country.
Someone who is disciplined and a defender of my country.
That's the media today. Glorify the enemy and tear down everything that's good in America.
Savage.
Here's some of the headlines on MichaelSavage.com. Senator Stabenow now says she feels global warming when she flies. Now, you know her as Debbie Stabenow. I've given her a nickname, Stabenow now, because her comments are stabbingly funny. And someone in the Detroit News has caught on to the Senator Stabenow now. Listen to what he wrote. Michigan just experienced its coldest July on record. Global temperatures haven't risen in more than a decade. Great Lakes water levels have resumed their 30-year cyclical rise, contrary to a decade of media scare stories that the lakes were drying up due to global warming, and polls show that climate change doesn't even make a list of Michigan voters' top 10 concerns. Yet, in an interview with the Detroit News Monday, Senator Debbie Stabenow, recently appointed to the Senate Energy Committee, made clear that fighting the climate crisis is her top priority. Listen to what Stabenow said. Quote, climate change is very real, she confessed as she embraced cap-and-trade's massive tax increase, at the same time claiming against all the evidence that it would not lead to an increase in manufacturing costs or energy prices. Quote, she said, global warming creates volatility. I feel it when I'm flying. The storms are more volatile. We are paying the price in more hurricanes and tornadoes, close quote. The writer concludes by saying, yes, and there are sea monsters in Lake Michigan. I can feel them when I'm boating. That's from Henry Payne, the editorial cartoonist for the Detroit News. And yet this dunce, Senator Debbie Stabenow, is actually on a committee dealing with the issues of climate and energy, and the woman doesn't have the brains of an average seven-year-old. And his weekly report on the shenanigans of the left coast, here is James Herson.
Thanks, Michael.
Hey, remember Roseanne Barr? You know, she used to have that TV sitcom, Roseanne. It's still on in reruns. Well, she decided that she needed to bring her unique skills to the task of advocating for her brand of so-called healthcare reform. So she did what any good liberal would do. She posed on a magazine cover dressed as Hitler.
Are you kidding? This is unbelievable to me.
Yeah. Using profane language, the former sitcom star urged Obama to, quote, do the right thing. And according to her, that means single-payer health care. In other words, Roseanne is angry that Obama is phasing in the single-payer plan by slowly destroying the private insurance industry. She wants Cuban-style care right now. Speaking of Fidel care, the chief Hollywood advocate of the Cuban health control system is propagandist Michael Moore, and his movie Sicko advocated that same single-payer plan, a.k.a. Cuban-style health control.
Mm-hmm.
The movie does just what the socialist promoters want right now. It demonizes insurers, it presents a crisis, and it provides the false choice of either doing nothing and causing terrible consequences or embracing the only possible solution presented, a freedom-choking, government-controlled system. So, the Moore flick is being screened for free, brought to you by a group called Organizing for America, a project of the Democratic National Committee.
Oh, like we didn't see that coming.
According to the publicity material for the Sicko screenings, every presentation of the film is followed by a public discussion on, quote, what can be done to create a fair and effective health care system. But Moore isn't the only one touting Cuba's health care. CNN has jumped in to pay tribute to the island tyranny. CNN actually aired a piece that claimed Cuba could serve as, quote, a model for health care reform in the United States. Of course, the CNN report included clips from Moore's movie, Sicko. I mean, you can't leave that out. The so-called reporter, Morgan Neal, was on location at a Havana hospital. Cuba's healthcare was called impressive. According to the CNN propagandist, Cuba's infant mortality rates are the lowest in the hemisphere, in line with those of Canada. This is what this so-called reporter said. But when you look at the numbers, even according to the UN, Cuba's current infant mortality rate is 44th in the world. Now, that's tied with Canada, which also has socialized medicine. But if we look back to 1958, the year before the revolution, Cuba's ranking in infant mortality was 13th worldwide. CNN left that statistic out.
Why?
Because it shows that freedom works. When Cuba was free, its infant mortality rate was better than Europe, better than Israel, and better than Japan. And by the way, the Castro brothers cook the books with a horribly high abortion rate that's left out. It's the highest in the hemisphere. So if there's any problems in pregnancy or problems that have to do with the baby's health, the baby's aborted. Hey, doesn't that sound similar to the House health care plan? Also left out of the CNN report in the UN numbers, according to the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, when you look at children aged 1 to 4, the mortality rate in Cuba is 34% higher than the U.S. That's a lot higher. Another item from the healthcare front, the Bolshevik billionaire, you know, George Soros, pledged $5 million to a coalition of left-wing groups that are seeking the so-called public option. You know, that's the slower transition to total government-controlled medicine that Roseanne Barr doesn't think is fast enough. The group, Healthcare for America Now, is behind the real astroturfing that's going on. And as you have pointed out, Soros indirectly provided funding to the constantly discredited group Media Matters for America. That's the group that intentionally distorted your statements and played a role in the contemptible UK travel ban.
Exactly.
Now, as a law professor, I have watched as your defamation case has grown stronger and stronger. And it occurs to me that in addition to the lifting of the ban, the apology that the UK owes, and the large amount of cash you should receive, you ought to seek an additional accommodation for settlement. Look, so many of the celebrities that I've covered over the years have been knighted by the Queen. It seems to me that making you a knight is the least they can do. But then we'd have to call you Sir Michael.
Ha ha.
Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. Oh, a dream I had last night. Remember I've told you for 10 years now I've been having a nightmare that I'm trapped at Heathrow and can't get out of it? I had it again last night. Again, I was in London. I was trapped at trying to get on a plane at Heathrow to get out of the country. Listen to this. You know, this is like precognitive recognition of what's coming. For 10 years I've had a nightmare that I was trapped at Heathrow in a large crowd and I couldn't get my plane in time to go home to New York, even though I don't live there. And no matter what I did, I'm trying to get on Pan Am, I'm trying to get on boat, British Air. I can't find my way, and the plane's leaving, and then I get on, and there's no seat. I'm trapped in England. Now, I want you to understand something. I've had this dream for well over 10 years. It's a recurring nightmare. Last night, I had it again. Now, I'm not trapped in England, but I'm trapped from going into England. And speaking of the geniuses who run England, the man who engineered the blowing up of Pan Am 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, is about to be released. The wonderful Arab, you're not supposed to say that. The wonderful worshiper of the religion of peace, I'm not supposed to notice that either. A man with a long Arabic name from the Middle East who blew up Pan Am 103 and killed 200 people, who is in jail in Lockerbie, Scotland, is being released from prison, and apparently he's not banned from the UK. In fact, he's imprisoned in the UK, so go figure. All I did was speak out, and I'm banned from the UK. But a terrorist who blew up an airplane is actually probably going to be invited to the parliament to give a speech. Go no. Go figure. I'll be back.
Savage.
Loves Mambo. Mama loves Mambo. Look at him sway with it. Getting so gay with it. Shout no lay with it. Wow.
Wow.
Papa loves Mambo.
Papa loves Mambo.
So anyway, there's a lot of things to notice other than Obama being a Marxist. Walks like a Marxist, talks like a Marxist, has policies like a Marxist. It is a Marxist. He surrounded himself by people who are open Marxists. I can name five of them. They're proud Marxists. Some of them are proud Maoists. You have a communist regime. Now, if you wanted that, good. I don't think he ran on the Communist Party ticket. I think he ran as a centrist, but fundamentally you have a guy who wants to take from those who produce and give it to those who don't. I mean, we go back to the Bolshevik Revolution, and the Bolshevik Revolution was run not by black people, not by Hispanic people, not by Asian people, but by white spoiled brats from the middle class and upper middle class of Russia who were guilty white liberals who were embarrassed because of the Tsar, and they stirred up the entire Russian nation to kill the Romanovs. And then came 100 million deaths in the last century as a result of this desire for fairness. When it was finally over, 100 million people were dead as a result of the desire for fairness. But if you look at the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917 in Russia, you have to go back to the French Revolution to understand where the Bolshevik Revolution came from. I have studied revolutions, so don't think I'm a novice with this. Obama is a revolutionary. He's surrounded by revolutionaries. And at the end of the day, it's not going to be a very pleasant picture in this country. That's what I think. But I've made my point. Yes, the latest Rasmussen poll says his approval ratings have fallen to a new low of 47%. And that's because he has absolutely mishandled the healthcare debate. by bashing people at these town hall meetings as Nazi, fascist, this and that, calling protesters evil, as Harry Reid did. It's backfiring on this administration. They made a big mistake here. Even liberals are starting to say Pelosi should go. So don't think that I'm making this up. But you've heard all of this before. I'd rather talk about the swine flu. People are dying from it. Do you know that? It's getting out of control. Now, before we talk about the swine flu, like I went today to have a blood test. You know, you get the periodic, the lipids, the this, the that, the PSA to see if your Schmendrick is still hanging. And I said to the lady pulling my blood, the young vampire, I said, how are you? Not good. Lost a relative to the swine flu. I said, what? Yeah, he was healthy. Went to this, went to that, and he dead quickly. It's frightening. It's like 1918, man. Like, here comes the worldwide swine flu. Now, you got to remember that flu used to have country of origin, like Asian flu when I was a kid. Like, we walk around and go, oh, look, the Asian flu's coming. And no one thought twice about it. I still went to the Chinese restaurant and poisoned my system with those bad chips that they had on the table that killed half the Jews in Flushing. They had on the table. Remember the Chinese restaurants and how unhealthy the food was? They had those greasy, horrendous, like, bad. And the people ate them like it was like pork rinds. I don't know what they were made of. Oh, but moving on. You know, it's hard to keep track of the broken promises from the Obama administration. Remember the 600,000 jobs saved or created by the end of the summer? Ha, 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 ha. Well, the numbers are out, and joining us now from the Heritage Foundation is James Shirk to talk about the real numbers.
Thanks, Michael. President Obama has promised that all this government spending and the stimulus plan, it's going to create or save 3.5 million new jobs by the end of 2010, by the end of next year. But it hasn't happened. Now, in part, he's being a bit slippery with this notion of saving jobs, because no matter what happens in the economy, he can always say, well, 3.5 million more jobs would have been lost if I wasn't president, and so therefore we've saved it. There's no way you can – no one can actually hold him accountable to that. But what we can take a look at is job creation and job loss rates. And what we've been seeing is not pretty. The numbers that came out on Friday were less ugly than we've been seeing recently. But still, job creation is it's the lowest rate we've seen since the government started a new survey on new hires about a decade ago. Job creation is at very low rates. It's lower now. Fewer jobs are being created than when Congress passed the stimulus package. Layoff rates have eased up a bit, but not all that much. And the hours employees are working are still lower than they were when the stimulus package was passed. So for all the promises to create or save jobs, we're not seeing that in the economy. Jobs are continuing to be lost, and they're not being created.
Well, how can the saving of jobs be measured? It sounds like a completely made-up statistic.
Well, it's impossible. That's why he's using the metric. I mean, he can always say that the economy would have completely collapsed and it would have been the second Great Depression. But instead, it was only a really nasty recession because of his policies. And you can never know for sure what would have happened otherwise. Now, we can take a look at the predictions that the Obama administration made when they first passed the stimulus package, that if we passed the package, that unemployment rate would only go up to 8%. But if we didn't pass it, it would go up to 9%. Well, we actually have unemployment at 9.5% now. So we're doing worse than the administration said that we'd do if we did nothing. So by their own measure, they've failed to save jobs. But again, we can't know for sure. I mean, those were just simply projections they made. They can always say, oops, we made a mistake. But our policies have really worked and have been really successful. It's a deliberately slippery measure.
How about the creation of jobs?
And that's the real problem. We can measure job creation rates. And what we've seen is that most of the reason unemployment has gone up is not because layoffs have increased. Layoffs have increased relatively. They're about layoff rates are about a fifth higher now than they were when the recession began. And it's real and it's painful. And it hurts for the families who lose their job. But the reason unemployment is rising so quickly is because job creation rates have fallen even faster. They've fallen from about 3.8% each month of jobs in the economy being new jobs down to 2.9%. It's the lowest level we've seen since the government started tracking these statistics about 10 years ago. And that means once you're unemployed, it's really difficult to find a new job because there aren't these new jobs available. The employers, entrepreneurs are just – they're not opening new businesses as much. Businesses are not investing and expanding and creating new jobs in the economy. And why would they? With all the talk about higher taxes and government redistributing wealth, well, you put all the effort and the work and the money into starting a new business, opening your own firm, and if you fail, you've lost all your money, you've lost all that work. But if you succeed, Obama's going to tax away everything you've earned to fund his health care plan or to fund the stimulus bill. So what's the incentive to do that there? And so entrepreneurs are not creating as many new companies, are not creating as many new jobs. Businesses are holding back on investment. Investments have fallen quite sharply since the recession began. And so because there's less job creation, you've got, if you've lost your job, it's much, much more difficult to find a new job. People are staying unemployed much longer. And at a very superficial level with the stimulus bill, you can have the government creating jobs. If you pay people to dig a ditch, hire 100 people to dig a ditch with tax dollars, well, they have jobs. But that money would have been used elsewhere in the economy. The debt that he's running up would have been used by, say, a business if it hadn't been loaned to the government instead of that business to open up a new project and a new factory. So you've got the stimulus bill, but it's the jobs it's creating are coming at the expense of other jobs elsewhere in the economy, are coming at the expense of the things that would actually help get the economy back on track.
Do you think they're going to learn from this, or will the economy turn itself around?
I think it's a bit of both. There's a natural business cycle. The most recent numbers seem to show pretty strongly that while it's a recession, it's not going to turn into the second Great Depression, which is very good news, although the economy still remains quite weak. And there's going to be a natural recovery from the recession. But the question is, how strong is that recovery going to be? Are we going to be stuck like Japan with over a decade of very little economic growth and very few jobs created? Or are we going to have the kind of healthy recovery we saw from, in, say, the 1980s, when we went through a similarly very sharp, very severe recession, but the economy was back on its feet and was roaring and was creating jobs as entrepreneurs were going out there, they're innovating, creating more wealth? And the answer to that, I think, is going to be largely determined by Washington. If you've got the government coming in and trying to redistribute wealth through the tax code, well, there's not much incentive to create wealth. There's not much incentive to innovate. If you've got the government trying to run the economy, well, we know it doesn't do it very well. And it makes it on the basis of what's politically expedient, not what's economically helpful, not what's economically efficient and creates more wealth and creates more jobs. So we could see Washington turn what would hopefully be, what under normal circumstances be a strong recovery, into a very anemic and weak recovery where unemployment remains high, where entrepreneurs are not going out and creating new jobs and starting new businesses, and job creation rates stay low for the extended future.
Thanks, James. They give us more smoke and mirrors when we really need our jobs. Savage.